freaking arrow!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Ewart is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
On Seattle Sports.
Well, we're going to steal you on the internet.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Ewart and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Hello. Well, we have a lot to discuss here on a Tuesday morning. Mike Lefko with you in for Salk. Brock Ewart is here, though. We're all here, Brock.
Oh, Morris good morning, here. Michael. Justin's good here. Morning.
Good morning.
How are you, bud? You good?
Good, yeah.
You like these mornings, right?
Yeah, I started the show, Brock, by saying, can you really say good morning after that Mariners game? But, you know, there's no good conversational way to say just morning. Yeah. So I said good morning anyway.
True.
We can make it a good morning. You and
on
I
this good morning, a minute into the show, I feel like I owe your mother an apology. One of the times you hosted, I was like, trying to set you up on a date with the text toy. And I was like, it's probably way inappropriate. I got a hand slap from management. Don't ever do that again. And I never really apologized to your mom. So I know that your mom is a faithful listener. When you jump on the show, she probably thinks I'm a really mean guy. You probably tell her, guess what, mom? This week I get to fill in a couple mornings. And she probably says, with that Neanderthal that tried to set you up with a date, that guy that's really mean to you. So I want to just start off right away, minute of the show, Mrs. Lefko, I apologize for that.
Look at this.
I'm going to try to treat young Michael in a much, much better manner. Try to, you know, be a great entertainment, have a lot of fun.
How do you know his mom wasn't happy you were trying to set him up with a date?
No, he knows. The great instigator. Brock knows that what he did was well received. And everyone was thrilled with that. So there he goes, cracking up, trying to get into it again.
Oh, no.
Can't even contain himself. Yeah. You know that that was well received.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Mama Lefko liked that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, well, maybe we got, you know, two shows.
Trying to give another shot. Yeah, we have two
maybe
shows.
Maybe we'll get in the batter's box again after striking out 15
times. We'll see if I come back tomorrow, though.
Brock, it's not quite summer yet. Remember, he established that there's only good dates in the summer.
True, this
weekend. So, okay, maybe we can get this going. This weekend, we can get – it's summer, yes. So.
We'll get you going like the Mariners will get going offensively.
Is this your long way of tying me back to the Mariners' lack of success last night?
Lack of offense.
You know, Lefko and Mariners striking out a bunch. Those two overlap. Something there. There's something that's got to be there. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there was a lot of strikeouts, huh?
Gosh. I believe they lead the league in strikeouts.
They do.
Yes. Yeah, that's – and it's the ones with, like, the bases loaded that just kind of get you out. I was trying to think of, and I don't do this as much as I used to. In fact, I use way, way, way more baseball analogies in my football. I do.
And, really?
Yeah. And, you know, when I started doing this 15 years ago, almost everything to the point where Salk's like, dude, you got to stop with the football. Like, the folks down there really don't like football, guy. Like, it's enough of the football analogies to everything in baseball. But it did feel, and it's felt this way a number of different times with the bases loaded. Some of the situational hitting where you put yourself in position, where you got a third and one, like get the first down. Like you've done the hard work. You've loaded the bases, right, against another pitcher that was dealing last night, another guy that had some pretty good stuff. But you load the bases with nobody out, third and one, move the chains, you know, in or, you know, take the shot. Let's go hit the big play. And instead it's strikeout, sack fly, and it just is demoralizing. Tomorrow, it just feel, and I know it's not to them. They play 162 games. They have 700 at bats. They flush. They move on. That is the mindset of those guys. That is the mentality of Scott Service, and why this team is so much more level than we are often as fans. But the situational hitting, Lefko, is, I think, of all of the frustrations of this season offensively, that's the one that tends to sting, at least to me, the most.
Yeah, I think you can go back to Friday as well, because for me, what was really frustrating, and then it carried over yesterday, was the Mariners not getting Hunter Brown out of that game. On Friday, when they got to him early, they scored a couple runs, loaded the bases in the second inning, and, you know, didn't get enough. They didn't do enough to get Hunter Brown out of the game, and then it came back and hurt them. And so when you're living on such a thin margin of your dominant pitching has to carry you or else it's going to be really tough to overcome, like we did see them finally do on Sunday, but then couldn't see them do yesterday. I think that's the issue you get into. And you're right. The seventh inning, they had a chance. They had a chance to really get into that Twins bullpen before they set it up to that dominant back end and Duran and what he does. He's got filthy stuff. We'll talk to Corey Provis about it coming up at 7:30 in this Twins team. But the Mariners' chance was right there in that seventh inning. And sometimes you only get one chance, and they could have taken advantage of it, and they didn't.
Yeah, I think that also, just in the Wayback Machine some years ago, Scott was very patient with me, and on these matinee days, we would go down to the stadium and often sit with Scott before games, and he would just say things that have stuck for all these years later. And he's like, the difference in the big leagues, and especially with the pitching you see today that every team has, Minnesota's got great pitching, Kansas City got great pitching, Detroit got great pitching, a lot of teams got some great pitching, is, Mike, you get like maybe one cookie in a bat, maybe, you know, maybe two, you know, just something right over the middle of the plate that you can really do damage with. And when you get that, you can't miss it. You just can't miss it. You can't swing and miss. And that, too, has just been a culprit these first 35 games for an offense that just still finds itself in a place where it's not getting started.
Well, let's get into one thing you mentioned there and kind of tie it to Julio specifically, because there's a lot that's going to be made out of every single thing Julio does. And that's just the nature of you sign a deal like that. You have the entire focus of the organization, the franchise, and a fan base on your shoulders. So, all right, whether unfair or not, because, you know, people throw out he's only 23, and because the rest of the Mariners lineup is also struggling, Julio is going to get the most scrutiny every single time. But to me, what jumped out and what was concerning was the eighth inning. And when he struck out looking on that curveball, a ball that just plopped right over the heart of the plate. And that, to me, says, you know, he was just so twisted up in his mind trying to either, you know, outmaneuver the pitcher or try to work backwards and guess fastball or sit on something else that you're getting in your head so much. You're not even seeing a pitch that hit settled right over the middle of the plate right there.
Yeah, just that thing you'll hear Mike Bauer say, right? And he's real poignant, and he's not, you know, super verbose, but just in between. You know, and it is the worst place to be as a radio host. It's the worst place to be in dating. It's the worst place to be as a quarterback. You just can't be in between. I guess that dating one just flew right over your head.
No, you didn't, I got it. Nah, I figured this would be first of a lot. So.
Nah, you didn't want to acknowledge it at all. You know, you don't want to be in between. You know, remember that old analogy growing up? Oh, man, sports is 90% mental. And then you're like, well, not really, because look at Anthony Edwards. Like, if you have that body and you can jump 45 inches, like, there's a lot of physical things to it. And, you know, Julio, to your point, like, we hold him to that standard, A, because he's been to those mountaintops, right? We've seen him in home run derbies. We saw the month of August. We see him put this team on his back and do things that very few can. We watch him physically. It's 6'3 and 230 pounds, not too dissimilar to Anthony on that Ant-Man on the court last night. Like, that dude's just different. I mean, he's just built differently. He's the envy of most of those guys, even in that professional building, would be like, man, I would love to have that skill set. I'd love to have those traits. So you do hold him to a little higher standard. And the one thing we have seen in 3 years with Julio is when he is in between, when that timing is off, it's big misses. Right. I mean, it is some low valleys. It is right now last on the team in slugging percentage on this offense, right? Sitting there at the bottom of it. So it is some valleys. The good news is we see him eventually click. We see that timing come. We see that dream date occur. We see that connection made. And just like you, Mikey, I'm holding out hope.
I'm going to start keeping notes here of all the references.
I am certainly of the belief it will happen with Julio. But watching him in between is a struggle, right? It's just it's hard to see because you know so much more is in that tank.
Yeah, and I think you can get into a lot of other tangents about, okay, yes, the guys behind him maybe need better run support. There needs to be some protection behind Julio that, again, it looks like all of the bulk of the Mariners' offense was put on Julio right now because the offseason acquisitions haven't gotten there yet. Now, Mitch Garver, I know A.J. Pierzynski, we heard from him earlier today again, that he expects Mitch Garver to break out. So we will not seal the judgment on Mitch Garver or Jorge Polanco. But, you know, when Garver's struggling, when Haniger's struggling, when all these guys behind Julio are struggling, it does put a bigger target on Julio to produce.
And he feels it. And he feels it. He wants it so bad.
And that, and they say, and I think that's the issue and the worry is that it feels like last year again for Julio, that him putting all this pressure on himself is leading to these results. So FanGraphs, they measure WAR differently than Baseball Reference, but FanGraphs has Julio as a -3.8 offensive WAR, also the lowest on the team. But, you know, any negative war, just, you know that. It's not going to be good. So Julio's got a negative offensive war, according to Fangraphs. We know the numbers. We can see it out there. And it feels like he, again, has tried to take the brunt of this entire offense on himself, and it's leading to this.
Yeah, it's a good thing the skipper is super, super patient, man. It's a good thing this pitching staff is super talented. And, you know, it's a good thing when these two can complement each other, right, that they can be playing this kind of ball, still winning series after series after series, knowing that this is coming. Knowing that that eruption is going to come. When it does, we will all celebrate. And while we wait, it is very hard, man. It's a fruit of the spirit, patience. And it's not one that a lot of fans have. And I totally understand that. And when you have a superstar and you're waiting for him to get going, it can be that much more difficult.
Baseball and dating. Got to be patient. There you go. Threw one in there for you. This is the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports. And the Seattle Sports app will get you what you need to know up next.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, we'll talk to Brady Henderson about this and much more coming up at 8:30, but Brock, we'll get your thoughts here. Yesterday, the Seahawks, Brady reported that the Seahawks restructured Mike Jackson's salary, moved it down a little bit, so he's getting slightly over $1 million. That's non-guaranteed. They're giving him just over $167,000 in a signing bonus. They don't have much cap space, so what does this move kind of say to you?
Yeah, you're just trying to create. I bet the next one we'll see is John Rattigan. They'll do the same with him because he, too, was tendered. So John Schneider likes to say, and you and Bob and Dave, over the course of the winter leading up to the draft, talk to John all the time, and I know he says it to you guys. Like, these things are just practices and process built in place. Like, this is just what the calendar does. You know, everybody loves to freak out, and on the outside, we get, you know, we're privy to some of the information. We don't get all of it. They have all of it, and they know that some of these mechanisms are in place. Like, okay, we'll redo and reset this. We'll reset this. We'll turn this into a signing bonus and free up this space. So it's why the exercise of constantly keeping track of salary cap space is sometimes a fool's errand, because they're able to do things and moves like this. They'll do the same with Rattigan, and they'll have enough space and they'll have enough money to sign all their draft picks and get ready for training camp.
A couple other things, Brock, going on in the NFL. Rashad Penny has signed with the Panthers.
What?
Justin loved this joke. Seahawks East. I didn't know it was that original, but it's what Dave Canales is building over there. And Joe Burrow throwing at Bengals OTAs yesterday, working back from that wrist injury.
Well, good news for Salk. He's out of town and probably won't know the Rashad Penny news. So he'll still think he's a free agent like a week from now, and we'll let him just hammer on the radio like, why can't they just sign him? Why can't they just bring him in? Well, he's actually with Dave Canales building the new Seahawks out in Charlotte.
Sounds like a future topic to me. That's going to be good. I will tune in for that one when you build that in as a topic.
Here's the second thing you need
what
to
Salk
know.
What Salk doesn't know. That could be a good topic.
Okay. There's a segment right there.
What Brock Salk and Salk don't know. And I'll throw myself in there.
I mean,
what Brock and Salk
you could
don't
go for
know.
Hours on what you don't know.
True.
But here's one more thing that I think we do know. The Mariners were held to a season-low 3 hits last night. Also struck out 14 times. Gave Simeon Woods Richardson a career-high 8 strikeouts. This is an important one today for Emerson Hancock, Brock, because it might be his final start. Brian Wu had a 5 shutout inning outing on Saturday, his third and what we assume is his likely final rehab start. So an important start and a key one for Emerson Hancock this afternoon.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways. I mean, for Emerson, it's such a, you know, we had a great chat with John Smoltz yesterday about these baseball players in many ways, especially pitchers, are independent contractors. Yet they all work under the same umbrella of that construction firm. You know, and for an Emerson Hancock, you're absolutely right. Wu is looming. He's been in the dugout. He's watching. He knows that he's going to get that shot. And he's going to get the ball because his upside is more than Hancock. But you want Hancock to just do awesome. And then you want him to go down to Tacoma and continue to dial it up and light it up. Why? Because, well, I don't know. Maybe if you need a bat and you have that need a month from now or a month and a half from now, as Jim Bowden put in a proposed trade, Emerson Hancock was the piece of that. Or you could also say, forget that, Heward. You're an idiot. You can't have enough pitching. You know you're going to need him down the road. So regardless of the situation, I don't think he puts that pressure on himself. I really don't, Mike. You can't. You can't sit there and go, well, I got to deal 7 shutout innings. I got to be perfect today. I got to go keep my spot. Because I don't think there's anything he can do today. When Wu is healthy, he's going to be in this rotation. Emerson will be down at AAA. And all he's got to do is his job as an independent contractor, keeping himself right.
Well, we can have that discussion, the Emerson Hancock potential trade and the Heward is an idiot discussion coming up at 9 o'clock. We'll focus on the Emerson Hancock trade part. But that's coming up at 9 o'clock.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Me and my wife called in for the second part of that.
Yeah, who knew? Yes. Who knew? We'll have her hop on at 9 o'clock. So the Rangers did move into first place. They've won three in a row, but they got some injury concerns going on. Put rookie Wyatt Langford on the IL with a right hamstring strain. He's expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks. And the Rangers opening day starter, Nathan Eovaldi, has been on the IL. He's going to visit a specialist for his right groin strain. So the time is now for the Mariners to kind of get past Texas, build up some momentum in the division. And Brock, this is something pretty cool. It does involve a Washington State grad, but I think you'll appreciate it. The Guardians called up Kyle Manzardo, a second-round pick from Washington State in 2021. Made his MLB debut, but he had that welcome to the show moment, 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts yesterday.
What did I read about him? He was the highest draft pick since...
Yeah, in a while.
In a long time, right?
From Washington State, yeah.
Yeah, I don't
know
Cougs.
I don't know the other one that you're mentioning.
No, that's fine. I mean, Olerud... You know, Olerud had to be a first rounder, right? He had to be, but it's been a while and really cool opportunity for him. And you're absolutely right when it comes to the Rangers because those old men are coming back at some point. DeGrom is coming back. Scherzer's coming back. Those guys are coming back. You know that they will spend. You know that they will trade. You know they will be aggressive to meet the needs. At least that's been their style over the last few years on their roster. And yeah, the time is now. And with the way you've been pitching, man, that is the other thing. That's everything you need to know. I think that is the other thing that plays into, just some of these offensive struggles is, man, this pitching in Luis was just filthy again, right? It's just filthy again. And you just know that, man, if you give him a three spot, right, if Ty is able to put one in the gap and all of a sudden all three of those runs come home and all of a sudden you're up 3-1, you feel like game over, lights out, you know, just because he's going to be able to finish and get through that inning and you get to the bottom, you rotate, you know, it's just bullpen and let's go. And we'll add another win and series win. And it just takes that one. Scott's been saying that a lot, right? It just takes that one. And, you know, the one stat number, I shot this to you last night, that struck me is right now the Mariners have actually hit more home runs than doubles. I believe the Oakland A's, the only other team in baseball to do that. And obviously, similar parks, right? A hard place to hit, certainly in the early part of the season. And T-Mobile, we know it doesn't dampen, you know, home runs as much as it does line drives. Those balls just hang in those gaps. So get on the road. I would sure love it. It's what Minnesota did last night, right? It was a double here. It was a double there. It was a double here. And that was the difference, you know, for their offense. So hopefully we can just start spraying a few of those to the gaps in that pretty big park in Minnesota.
I thought you were going to mention the other Minnesota team. Your guy, Anthony Edwards. Timberwolves destroy the Nuggets 106-80. Take a 2-0 series lead. Dude, that's another thing you need to know.
That energy those guys played with. It is what, you know, it is why the NBA product for 82 games is hard to watch because they never crank it to that 10. They look like Nolan Richardson's 40 minutes of hell. They were playing 10 dudes. They were in those guys' shorts like college, like high school. Like Mike Krzyzewski's guys hitting the floor, getting down in their stance and moving their feet. And I mean, absolutely harassing those guys with defense. You don't see the NBA play. Like, do you hear Barkley at halftime? Barkley at halftime is like, that's the greatest defense I've ever seen in my life. And Kenny's like, ever? And Charles is like, ever. Because they're 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", 7 foot, 6'7". Like, those dudes are long. And pretty amazing start.
And no Rudy Gobert, who we can save this for a later hour to talk about this, because it's an interesting discussion that Dave Wyman is on the side that I don't think most people are. Maybe they are. So we can get into that later. But we got to catch up with Corey Provis, the TV voice of the Twins. He will kind of piece together what happened for us and maybe what to expect the rest of this series. You're listening to Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Mike Lefko and Brock Huer here with you on a Tuesday morning. Big series going on. Mariners and Twins, 4-game series. And we have a lot to talk about with this man who joins us now in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, Corey Provis, the TV play-by-play voice of the Twins. Corey, how are you this morning?
Mike, what's up, man?
We are doing well, Corey. I have to say, I have to ask you a very serious question to start. I'm sure you might be sick of it by now, but can you explain the Twins' summer sausage to us and how this fit in during their recent 12-game win streak?
Yeah, sure. So the team got off to a dreadful start. They were 7-13. And Kyle Farmer, one of the Twins' infielders, he did an endorsement deal with a meat company last season, And as a thank you, they sent a care package to Kyle at the ballpark as the season was just beginning to say, hey, good luck, hope you're well. And it just kind of sat around, and there was an assortment of, you know, meat and cheese and things like that. And David Popkins, the Twins hitting coach, said, you know what, we got to try something new. And so when the team was 7-13 and they were beginning a 10-game stretch where they were going to see the White Sox four times, the Angels three times, the White Sox again for three more, he said, you know what, our team isn't hitting. Let's try something new. So he saw this massive summer sausage that this company sent Kyle's way, and he said, hey, let's bring this out to the bat rack and see what happens. So beginning with that run with the White Sox and what started with the 12-game winning streak, he just had this big summer sausage hanging on the bat rack, and the guys were said, hey, go up, hit the meat, grab your bat, and go rake. And it worked, and then that thing traveled. Yeah. Then that thing went west to Anaheim, went back to Chicago, it came home. All of a sudden, T.C. Bear, when we got home, was dancing on top of the dugout. He had his own rally sausage that he was kind of, you know, cradling there a little bit. So it took on a life of its own and had some fun with it. But after losing to the Red Sox on Sunday, I can report that summer sausage has been disposed of.
I mean, are you kind of thankful for it? Because it could lead to, like, a lot of innuendo and inappropriate terms.
Oh, sure. And, Brock, it was good. There was going to be a potential international incident with this thing because the Twins are heading to Toronto
right
this weekend, and you cannot bring meat across the country line there. You cannot do that. So, you know, Eddie Julian is Canadian, so I don't know if they were going to say, hey, they won't bother, they won't care if it's you, you're going back home, you bring it in. There was, I'm sure there were some letters and emails written to politicians, the U.S. Embassy, whomever, to say, hey, if they kept on winning, this thing was going. So I think on that end, I think some might be glad that it did end with the loss on Sunday.
Corey Provost, the voice of the Twins, one of the voices of the Big Ten Network. I may throw a football one in at the very end of this with you. But I'm curious, Corey, as you prep for this series and study the series and get ready for these Mariners, and you've seen, you know, the Mariners for a bunch of years coming to Minnesota and you guys out here, we hear all the time how these two just feel so similar, the way they're built, the way they're structured, the way they develop. As you study, as you look at the numbers and the rosters, do you see that same parallel?
The Mariners have done a much better job with pitching, I think, with starting pitching. And that's something that the Twins have really missed on. In fact, it's changing a little bit that some of their guys that are homegrown are impacting the rotation. But, you know, to give you an example, just last year, the five starters that they began the season with were all guys they acquired via trade. Mm. And there weren't many homegrown guys. I mean, Joe Ryan, to an extent, was in the minor leagues when they acquired him from Tampa Bay for Nelson Cruz, but still he wasn't drafted by the Twins. They're trying to change that. They're trying to shift that. That's been a challenge. So I think Seattle has done a much better job in terms of developing their own starting pitching. But I think there were similarities with how well the staffs, both starters and even the bullpen, were able to miss bats. I think that was a fair parallel with the two teams, is that they had two pitching staffs that could just dominate the strike zone, and that was consistent. You know, they were two offenses that struck out a lot. The Twins, you know, hit a ton of home runs. They were okay to an extent with that strikeout rate because the counter was they're also slugging at a high rate. You know, they led the American League in home runs. But this year they were trying to make an effort to not strike out as much. I mean, they set the single season strikeout record as an offense last year and still won a lot of games. They advanced in the postseason. That was great. They wanted to keep that same aggressiveness but not be so, so consistent with that high strikeout rate. And it's high, but it's come down a little bit. And I know the Mariners are leading the way in that category entering the week. So that's something that they've tried to tweak. But in terms of just the contrast, Brock, with these two teams, I think, yeah, there's no doubt that Seattle has done the better job with just drafting and developing their own starting pitching.
And then these two teams made a trade this offseason, and I know Jorge Polanco got a very warm reception there yesterday. But, Corey, what was the perception of that trade when, you know, a guy who has been there his entire career gets traded away?
There was some money, I think, to get rid of there. I think the Twins realized they had some younger guys that could take over in that role that Polanco was providing. You know, Eddie Julian in particular has been the guy. He's been pretty much the primary second baseman, and he can really hit. He's in a slump right now, but he's got a great, great skill. If you look at his numbers last year and even this season, he does not chase too much. So that's something that they thought could play throughout the balance of the season. There's also a guy that they like in their minor league system. He's been hurt all year, but they didn't know this at the time of the trade, named Brooks Lee, that, all right, he's a former first-round pick. He can fill in and play some second base. So I think there was that side of it. At the same time, they were also looking to move some money around and maybe go out and get a guy. And the money that they did kind of shift around with Polanco heading to Seattle allowed them to sign a guy like Carlos Santana, who's playing really good defense at first base. So that was a part of it. I think they were optimistic that Anthony DeSclafani would pitch some. I don't think they were thinking they were going to get 30 starts out of him, but it turned out to be none. He's out all season, never threw a single pitch for the Twins in a regular season game. So that was a miss. You know, Justin Topa, they loved his workload last year, but he hasn't pitched yet either. He's been in the IEL. He's rehabbing. He's not too far away, but they haven't seen him throw yet. And they really thought the cherry was the prospect they got in Gabriel Gonzalez, the top 100 prospect in the game. You know, he's in the low levels of the minor leagues right now, but they thought, okay, this is a guy to add to our prospect system. So be it. It wasn't easy because Polanco has been so durable throughout his career, but they just felt from a financial standpoint and also from a positional standpoint, they had some depth behind Polanco.
Corey, how did your fan base handle the RSN and the cut in payroll?
Oh, not well. Not well. And they're livid right now. And maybe you guys have seen this, maybe you haven't. But, you know, Comcast, which has, you know, dominates the market in terms of cable, they have cut, you know, Bally Sports out of all of their 12 regional outlets. So Bally Sports North, where the Twins are on right now, is not available on the dominant cable provider as we sit here today. So that's been a big problem. That's relatively new. That happened last week. But it was an ordeal over the winter, and it was something that took a long time to figure out how this was going to be. And it wasn't finalized, Brock, until February that the Twins, you know, had a home. I mean, this was being litigated at bankruptcy court. So this dragged on and on, and then we finally had some resolution. Okay, you know, the Twins will be back on Bally Sports for the year. And then this Comcast deal, just to me, I didn't know about it, came out of nowhere. And now many, many people, I mean, thousands and thousands of fans cannot watch their favorite team on cable because there's no agreement right now between Comcast and Diamond Sports. And that's the group that owns Bally. And so that's causing more headaches with this whole, you know, process right now that has really frustrated the fan base.
Yeah, Corey, that's something that I think Mariners fans out here kind of, you know, they always want this team to supplement what they have, especially when you have ever shifting windows in baseball. Do you see that being a challenge for the Twins, or how are they going to deal with a window of contention where you have good pitching, you have a big contract in Carlos Correa, but it sounds like there are some TV uncertainties out there?
Yeah, and that played into, I'm not going to say it's the whole reason why, but they did cut payroll. I mean, they cut payroll substantially after they had momentum in the market, winning. You know, they had that big weight on their shoulders forever because they had not won a playoff series in a long time, in over 20 years. They had the longest consecutive postseason losing streak of any team in any North American sport, 18 straight playoff losses. That finally ended. So there was momentum, and it did not happen in the offseason with the TV situation and probably other reasons as well that, you know, that they did not add to the payroll. And that frustrated fans from the outset, and it just felt like all winter long and into the season, and we've seen it some with the crowds. We have not had, you know, great crowds so far, and that's, you know, it's not abnormal here this early in the season. It's really during the week with school still in session, but even some of the weekend games haven't been well attended, that I think there's a portion of our fan base that is like, you know what, I'm going to wait this out a little bit. I'm upset with the lack of moves in the offseason, not capitalizing on the moment, and I may get back on board, but it's going to give me some time. At the same time, the Timberwolves right now are the talk of the town. I mean, they are dominating the market with how they're playing, and Ant's a star. You know, the Vikings are still the dominant team in this area for 12 months out of the year, not too far removed from the draft. So the Twins, yes, they got off to a bad start. That didn't help matters. But even with this win streak that they just went on and now winning 13 of the last 14 games, there's still some anger. And I think it's fair from fans in this market with all that's going on, you know, this season and over the winter.
Well, nothing that a summer sausage giveaway, right? I mean, I think that's right. The answer. Just for all the fans, right. A little right. Summer sausage. Hey, last minute here, Corey. I know you do a ton of work and great work with Fox. We're partners in that way over in the Big Ten. Are you ready? You ready for the Ducks and the Dogs and the Trojans and the Bruins to invade Big Ten territory?
I'm excited for it. You know, I'm done doing football. That was my decision. You know, Brock, I have a 10-year-old son, an 8-year-old daughter. And at some point, I need to, you know, unplug and just be a dad and be a husband and just be around for my wife. I didn't see my daughter play one soccer game, and she's 8. I didn't see one soccer game, even one practice last fall. And I said, what am I doing?
You know, what are you doing? I mean, what were you doing? Seriously, you were calling like a Gophers, Cornhuskers game. What were you doing, Corey? Come on.
I mean, it's cool. I've been there. It was really neat. And I'll still do basketball. So I'm excited for basketball. But nice. You know, I'm excited to get my Octobers back. And last year I had the best time going to the Big House twice and going to Ohio State twice. And I've been lucky enough to call some games for FS1. Yeah, I used to do the Pac-12 After Dark game with Petros and Shane. Had a lot of fun going to some great venues out west. And those, I'll always savor those times, those memories. But I have to be a dad and have to be more present in my kids' lives. So I'm not going to do football for the first time in a while, and I'm okay with that. At the same time, I get to be a fan and come basketball. Yeah, I'd love to go to Pauley Pavilion, man. I'd love to go do a game there. I've never done a basketball game there before. So, you know, part of it's going to be pretty neat, the novelty of it. I'm really excited to go see and go travel and hopefully get that chance over the winter.
Well, Corey, thanks for the Twins insight, and you made Brock's morning with the summer sausage story. That's why I had to bring it up.
Marriage, life work balance. Yeah. You know, we'll get to all this stuff with Lefko here in just a second, Corey. So, yeah, I always appreciate
Brock,
it, man.
Hey, great to be with you guys, and don't take it easy on Benetti, okay?
Never.
Because he's a big deal.
Never.
He's a big name, I guess.
Never.
Feel free to push him around, okay?
Will do.
All right, thanks, Corey.
All right, guys, take care.
There you go, Brock. You're getting Benetti dragged along.
That's back-to-back days.
Back-to-back days.
Barnes, I'm going to need that MP3, please. Man. I'm going to send that to him, just as I sent yesterday AJ Pierzynski that just buried old Benetti.
Oh, what did you think about that one? His name being Mud now.
Oh, yeah. He got a good kick out of that. Yeah. But you don't push Benetti around. That's not kind. Yeah, I would never do something like that. But Corey brings up something important there, Lefko, because this is what happens, right? You date, you get married, you have kids.
Oh, I thought he was going to say something relevant. I thought you were going to mention
and then
the
you
twins.
Get, you know, work
he had a
balance.
Twins insight.
They've won 14 of 15, huh? Seriously, as he was kind of rambling those things off, like, well, you know, playoff drought, you know, well, some of the struggles with the regional sports network, well, you know, struggles with strikeouts. Like, I know we're different with the starting pitching, but man, there are a ton of similarities between the two rocking right now.
There are, and we will get into those. We have plenty of time to get into that. And, you know, we didn't even ask him about the pitching, where it looks like Woods Richardson was their fifth starter. He's the new guy to the rotation. They just called him up, and he did that. So we'll see what we're in for over these next three games. It starts today. Pre-game coverage at 3:30. First pitch at 4:40 here on Seattle Sports. But right now, we got to get to Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Brock, first off here, what will be paramount for Mike McDonald to fix this Seahawks defense?
Communication. Mm-hmm. Communication, communication, communication. There's going to be more and more depth to that communication. I know Maura, you know, over the years, it would drive her crazy. Like, why are we hearing all these guys every year? We brought Bobby back last year, and we're supposed to end these communication issues. Well, that starts in the coaching room. That starts with the install. That starts with the details. And I really like this cut, if you would fire it off for me. This was from Michael Lombardi yesterday on the old VSiN network, talking about Coach McDonald and what he will bring and why he was just the right fit for that defensive structure he's going to bring to the VMAC.
Right? They get Murphy, one of the best defensive players in the draft. Last year, McDonald, under the guidance of his leadership in Baltimore, was able to get 9.5 sacks from Clowney off the street and 9 sacks from Van Noy off the street in August and September, and they were able to pressure the passer. This secondary is very good. I mean, Weatherspoon's going to be a good player. Woolen's already a good player. Michael Jackson has talent. You know, they can cover, and I think they'll play the right scheme. So this is a team that no one's going to talk about, but I like their team. I like what John Snyder has done. I like the coaching hires. I like the new innovative scheme, mm-hmm. and I like the players that they've added.
Help me think and process this out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I'm usually a...
I have to help you think? Okay.
Yes, because I usually process, my wife would tell you, like internally and get my points all ready to go before I make them, kind of analytically that way. I'm trying to think from a development side. When I hear Lombardi say that, and I think of McDonald, who have been some case studies in true Seahawk defensive development that you love? Who have been the Logan Gilberts, the George Kirby's, the Bryce Millers? Like, who have they developed from their defensive personnel since the time you've been here, Mike? Or Mora or Justin, can you think of some real, like, because Tyler Lockett, boom, home run. DK Metcalf, boom, home run. Geno, boom, home run, player of the year. I mean, they've done so offensively with different pieces.
I think Chris Carson. Puna Ford jumps out as the obvious one.
He developed and then it just nosedived.
They developed him, though.
They did.
Undrafted?
They did. Absolutely. Absolutely undrafted to a contract. Absolutely. Because that's going to be the key. Like, if you have to sit here and think this long about it, kind of like the Minnesota people traded for Leonard Williams, and you trade and you bring free agents in, and you sign Uchenna, like, that's all great, and you need to do some of that. But the best defenses are the ones that develop their own. It's just the way it is. Like pitching staffs. The best pitching staffs develop their own. And if Mike McDonald can develop and take another step with Boye Mafe, another step with Woolen, another step with these young guys, and certainly the ones they drafted, and Byron right in the middle, to Lombardi's point, they got some pieces
developers,
to work
with. Developers, developers, oh, no. Developers,
why?
Developers, developers.
Because he knows.
Got him going.
Once he plays that, this show gets lit. Question two.
Shaking our head in horror.
Question two.
Developers. Developers, I'm done.
I didn't sign up for this, Brock.
developers. And then when he grits his teeth and it gets so good.
I'll tell you what, he's not developing his basketball team very well. But we can get into that some other time.
No.
Number two, though, Brock, what's most telling to you about Mike Jackson's restructured contract?
Well, you read it, Need to Know. So it was a $3 million deal on paper. That's what the restricted tender was. You knew that they were not going to play to that, that the market, if Mike Jackson was on the market, he's not seeing that kind of money. So they go to him and say, we're restructuring this deal. We're going to knock it down to $1 million. And now here was the key to me. How much is guaranteed? So I'm going to try to answer my last question and tell you a story that I don't think I've ever shared on the air. But I think now statute of limitations have passed and I can share my own contract negotiation that I had. Because the key is how much guaranteed, though. And only 160, I say only 160. In football terms, that's an only. Right? They guaranteed some of these undrafted free agents just about as much money. So Mike Jackson's going to have to go and fight and scratch and claw and earn this job. Because that tells me it wasn't guaranteeing all of it. It wasn't guaranteeing half of it. You can guarantee whatever you want to guarantee in those deals. Even the Cleveland Browns guaranteed Watson $240 million. So to guarantee just about a tenth of that, means, boy, you got 90% of you's got to go and fight and claw to make this team.
Interesting. All right, number three. Brock, will Sam Howell be a more viable competitor to Geno than Drew Locke was?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think some of that is not even just the talent of Sam Howell versus the talent of Drew Locke. It's also the timing. It's also a new staff. It is a new system. It is not, hey, man, Geno's got a head start. He knows the system. He's repped in the system. And no, we traded for Sam Howell, right? And now, obviously, Drew was thrown into the trade with Russell Wilson, so he was one of three pieces with that, with a lot of draft capital. But this was like, no, five teams wanted Sam Howell. Five teams wanted him. And you know why, watching this draft? Because there was a huge drop-off from the top six guys to Spencer Rattler, like four rounds worth. So you knew that other teams wanted Sam Howell, and I think for all of those reasons, both on the outside, right, just timing-wise, with a new system, new eyes, new people, new everything, and also Sam's traits, man, and playing 17 games and being one durable, competitive sucker. Like, yeah, ball security issue, sure. Does he do everything right? Absolutely not. Is it going to be 50-50? Nope. This is going to be Geno's job to lose. But I think Sam's going to push him in ways that, just timing-wise, skill-wise, resume-wise, Drew Lock was not able to do with Geno Smith.
I was going to say, so is this just perception? Because you don't truly want a backup to be pushing your starter, right, in terms of reps and time he's on the field. You want your starter to be the starter. So you just think because of all the acclaim he comes over with, that is enough to push Geno more?
I think what he did last year, playing 17 games, right? And what he did against you, throwing for 350 yards, a couple touchdowns, and nearly beating you in your building. I think because these young Bucks, and there's a lot of young guys on this roster, look at it. You can't fool the locker room. I say that to Salk all the time, Lefko. Like, you can't fool that locker room. Tyler and DK and those guys are going to let you know. K9 and Fant and those lines, they're going to let you know. Like, they will let you know if this is a legitimate. And they'll do that over the next few months of these OTAs, because if we hear more rumblings like, dude, this guy can play. Like, this guy just needs a chance. Like, this guy can really go. I mean, Pete always loved to praise Drew Lock. Did you hear that from the locker room, though? Not so much. I think you will hear more of that rumbling from this locker room because of Sam's skill set, because of his play, because of some of his just swag and what he did, frankly, last year, over 17 starts in the league.
That's interesting. See, I don't This is not probably the venue right here.
No, this is the venue right here. Let's go.
Don't you think the locker room really likes Geno? Because they've been here with him. They have played with him, and they know what he could do. Like a DK Metcalf and a Tyler Lockett. They have worked with Geno in the offseason. Sam Howell's a new guy. They don't know him yet. He's not going to get the opportunity or the reps, you hope, to build that chemistry, because backup quarterbacks just don't get reps. So I know Brady Henderson has mentioned this, and we'll talk to him at 8:30, but I don't think you want Sam Howell building to that, at least this year.
I think that's a great debate and a great conversation. That is a little Blue 88 as we wind that down. Let's carry it over, actually.
Okay.
I don't know what you had planned for, you know, the top of the year. You're a planner. Yeah, I love that about you.
I develop things, Brock. Yeah, I just develop the show.
Developers.
There you go. I led you into the... I'm helping you out so much today.
Do you notice how much he perspired back in the day? He must have been an energy drink guy. Seriously.
That's
what
it was.
You can't...
that's exactly what it was.
You can't perspire like that naturally. There had to be some sort of stimulant, you know, some sort of what I'm drinking, coffee with two extra shots, and it's some sort of something that gets you that sweaty and that fired up. No, I think this is a good debate. And actually, 2012, I'll point back to the spring of 2012. I'll circle back 12 years ago to add, I think, a further context and insight. And then I'll get to my own negotiation where I sat in a car and was not sweating like Ballmer like that, but I had come out of the Bally's. I did have a good sweat on me, and I was sweating a little more as I got into a pretty heated conversation about some guaranteed money.
Okay, well, we will get into that. We were going to talk about rookie minicamp. We can save that till Brady Henderson gets here at 8:30. But a lot coming up, a lot of Seahawks talk to get to. Mike Lefko, Brock Heard with you here. I'm Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.